Welcome to episode 283 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in what is turning out to be an epic series on the history of computing. If you'd like to find the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
Has this gotten longer than you intended? Well, yeah.
When I started it, I thought I'd just like whip through in like four episodes.
Yeah, we got
this. We'd do this for a month.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose if I hadn't started with the Stone Age, we might have done this a little sooner.
It's the history of back when they were banging rocks together.
But, you know, I started a podcast. I've always wanted a show to do this for me, mm-hmm. So I did it. I did it. And am still doing it. No show next week.
Aha.
Veterans Day.
Yes.
Hopefully a show this week.
We made the announcement this time.
Yeah, I get better. Yeah. All right. Other stuff. Started a new project, Project Ada. We'll probably be blog posts about it fairly soon.
Mm-hmm.
Also a video coming from the Dorg.
Yeah.
And while I was looking at the history of computers,
mm-hmm.
there's this other thingy device that was hanging around in the beginning of AI.
Okay.
And the very first one, I found it in a throwaway line in Chapter 8 of Real Time Interrupt by James P. Hogan.
What?
Okay. It's the snark hunt. I went on a snark hunt.
Good for snarks.
Good for snarks. Actually, it was a bit of a coincidence because November 1st, 2020, I started a new project.
Aha.
Which doesn't actually have a name yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But the idea behind this is that there is no single AI algorithm that can solve all the problems you'd want to have a robot that can do the sort of things that three-year-old children can do.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, which makes sense. Our brain does several different things to make stuff
different machines
happen.
All put together in some way. So instead of struggling like crazy to get, say, neural networks to do everything,
mm-hmm.
let's go ahead and use naive Bayes classifiers or Markov models mm-hmm. or
all those things.
Symbolic mm-hmm. logic or...
Yeah, that one.
Oh, that's one of my favorites. Expert systems, oh, they're sexy. Yeah. But anyway... I went on a snark hunt because we've been talking so much about computers. I wanted to mention at least a little bit about the neural network stuff that had happened.
Okay.
And these are machines and programs designed to behave at least a little bit like the human mind does.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the human brain.
From a high-end point of view, makes sense. You know, the brain does what it does, so if we just model it right, then we'll get a brain.
So a paper had been put out
mm-hmm.
where they did an abstract model of a neuron.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nerve cell, especially one in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And said, hey, you know, their actions are kind of similar to higher order logic here.
Okay. So, yeah.
And then along comes this student.
Yeah.
Marvin Minsky.
Mm-hmm.
He graduated from Harvard and became a graduate student
mm-hmm.
at Princeton.
Okay.
Late 40s at Harvard, early 50s at Princeton in 1951, the summer of 1951, he decided he was going to build an artificial neuron-based machine.
Go him.
Go him. He actually he bumped into another guy at Princeton, another graduate student, Dean Edmonds,
okay,
who was even better at electronics than Marvin was.
Uh-huh.
And Marvin at first didn't think he could build the thing.
Oh, he was wallowing in despair.
Yes.
He's like, this can't be done.
But along comes Dean.
Hey, Dean!
And between the two of them, they got it down to 6 vacuum tubes and a motor. That would be enough for a neuron.
Okay.
Well, he'd been playing with this for a while, and he was talking to a professor back at Harvard,
mm-hmm.
George Miller.
Okay.
So rather well-respected up-and-coming psychology professor.
Oh, well, hey.
Talking to him about this machine and how, you know, we could almost do it.
Mm-hmm.
And Miller says, why not go ahead and build it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then somehow rustled several thousand dollars out of the United States Navy.
I don't know who he is, but he's doing it right.
Yeah. Good. He's a psychology major.
Yeah.
Or professor, even. I know how to talk people out
of
things.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah. You know, it would look good on your resume there, General.
Well, I guess it'd be Admiral. It was the Navy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the kind of mistake that doesn't get you your thousands of dollars.
They'd kick me out. Be like,
all right, so Stochastic Neural Analog Reinforcement Calculator.
Okay.
Although the last word might be computer, Marvin Minsky himself in a talk I saw didn't seem sure himself what the last letter stood for. I think they made the acronym, called it Snark,
yeah, yeah,
started giggling, and then forgot whatever the words were.
That's perfect.
But these two little circuits would fire,
mm-hmm.
and a capacitor would hold the fact that they fired, a little bit of charge.
Okay.
And then it would activate a clutch.
Okay.
It is now holding the wheel that will be turned by what was apparently a bicycle chain.
Hey, okay.
And this is in response to either the experimenters hit a button that said something good just happened,
mm-hmm.
or there was an automatic electrical signal.
Okay.
And there were only 40 neurons.
Okay.
Around 300 vacuum tubes.
Okay.
And thousands of hand-soldered connections.
Oh, no. The problem with prototypes. Hand-built. You don't know if it's working the way it's supposed to or not.
It turns out, at least with the neural network architecture, that whole thing is robust to failure.
Mm.
There was some interest in it back when we were still doing vacuum tubes, because they fail a lot. And like Marvin said, with with several hundred vacuum tubes and thousands of hand-soldered connections, it probably never actually ran the way we expected. But they had it running mazes somehow and had a little display with lights,
mm-hmm.
and each light they would call a rat.
Okay.
And they found out by accident that they could run more than one rat through the maze at once.
Cool.
They even at least appeared to react to each other.
Oh.
Where one would find a new way to get there quicker, and all of a sudden, ones that were way in the corner would come scampering over.
Hey! Over here, guys! No, left!
But Marvin Minsky is a name in AI, all over AI. And while I was poking around him, I got a talk from him to MIT back in 2007.
Oh, okay.
He passed away in 2016.
Oh.
And he was talking about the state of AI, and he was specifically saying we need to stop looking for one algorithm to solve all these problems.
Hey, hey.
So that makes me comfortable with, I'm not sure if I'm going to link to this talk or not. He did some rhetorical things that I'm not a fan of.
What do you mean?
At the beginning, he tried to make it an emergency. He says, look at these curves. Our population is getting older and older.
Mm-hmm.
One day, we won't be able to survive without a bunch of robots to pamper and care for us.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he wants the funding, and he's not the psychology guy.
This trick works shamefully well.
Oh.
Across the board. Just, you can scare anyone. Draw a few lines on the graph and say they're going to keep going that way.
Oh, or if you make the right map. Oh, look out.
Well, anyway, yeah. So I thought I'd give a nod to the first neural simulator machine that we know of,
called a Snark,
that was ever built. It was a throwaway line in the middle of the book, and I'm like, the Snark, huh? It turned out to be a real thing.
Yeah, I've heard of snark hunts, but it was like you take the kids out into the woods and have them hunt snarks, so yeah, they'll leave you alone,
or a snipe hunt or whatever.
Snipe, that's what it was called. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
I've heard it called both,
mm-hmm.
but now we want to hunt transistors. They are arguably the most manufactured and sold device in the history of humanity.
Oh,
what with making billions of them a day.
Yeah.
Now, there are often millions of them,
yeah.
on these little chips that are smaller than your thumbnail.
Oh, hey.
Not that much smaller, but smaller, you know.
Well, how big is your thumb?
Big thumbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was to replace the triode vacuum tube.
Oh, okay.
And a quick reminder on this, you heat the crap out of one wire,
mm-hmm.
so that it doesn't hold on to its electrons so much.
Okay.
And then there's another plate that's cold,
mm-hmm.
that picks up the electrons.
Uh-huh.
What with being connected to the positive terminal of the battery or some such.
Uh-huh.
And then, between those two wires, you have a zigzaggy one.
Okay.
And that one you apply a weak current to.
Okay.
And if it happens to be negative, it will interrupt the flow of electrons.
Mm-hmm.
If it happens to be positive, this is the reason why it's zigzaggy, the electrons get accelerated towards it, right past it, and then they go to the higher potential that's on the anode.
Oh, okay.
So you could put a weak electric signal on the little grid,
mm-hmm.
and get a stronger one out of the thing.
Oh, neat.
All very well, except it has to be heated, and it burns out like light bulbs. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a lot of work being done on how to get reliable results from unreliable components.
Some poor guy's job is to replace all the plugs, you know?
Yeah, over and over again. And one of the advantages of the neural network is that pieces can break and the entire machine still works.
Oh, okay.
But the other thing you could do is replace the vacuum tube.
Yes, you could.
So they already knew about a diode you could make from crystals.
Mm-hmm.
You put a little cat's hair whisker on it, and you have your crystal receiver.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And that makes the current flow in one direction and only one direction.
Mm-hmm.
Good. But what about something where you can put a weak signal in and get a large one back out?
Like we were just talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that turns out to be a little trickier.
Okay. Does it involve crystals?
Yeah, all of this is crystals.
Okay.
It's why they call it solid-state physics, because it's in solids. Crystals are solids. So at Bell Labs,
okay.
A fellow named William Shockley figured he knew how to make a transistor.
Uh-huh.
He got the idea from an earlier patent from 1925, but let's not talk about that.
Okay.
This is called the field effect transistor.
Okay.
Now what you do is you have one of these diodes
mm-hmm.
of a crystal,
yeah,
you know, and maybe one that is barely lets any current through at all.
Okay.
But then you apply an outside electric field.
Okay.
This is like a plate that doesn't quite touch the crystal.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a current. You're putting an electrostatic field, a voltage.
Mm-hmm.
This should loosen up some electrons and get some current flowing.
Okay.
Depending upon the polarity you put on the plate.
I almost understand this. Okay. I'm ready.
Yeah. So he got together with some other folks at Bell Labs,
uh-huh.
Including John Bardeen,
okay.
who was a theory guy.
Yeah.
He got 2 Nobel Prizes in physics. one for this work on the transistor and one for a work on superconductivity. He was a smart dude.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And Walter Braddon, who mm-hmm. was apparently a gadget guy. Very good at putting together physical experiments.
All the best and brightest at Bell Labs. Okay.
Yeah. Very productive place. This is their heyday, in a way. They were having an average of 2 patents a day.
That's saying a heck of a thing. You have to write it up and everything, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Shockley set up an experiment to try and make the field transistor happen, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And he passed it on to the other two and said, hey, you guys figure out why this isn't working and what we can do about it.
Because I'm tired. You're smart. Yeah.
John Bardeen figured you'd put on the charge
mm-hmm.
and a layer of electrons would happen near the surface of the crystal,
okay,
which would block the rest of the charge from making it into the rest of the crystal and doing what you want it to do.
Oh, okay.
Along the way, he made another branch of physics for surface effects.
Okay. Yeah, he gets distracted. He's like, wait, I need to write this up.
So him and Walter mm-hmm. spent a long time doing a lot of experiments, and every now and then it would work, sort of, kind of, a little bit.
Yeah, and did they know why?
There were a couple of experiments that seemed to support the theory.
Okay.
And then one day they tried something. They actually put it. They were thinking maybe it was the interface between the contacts to the crystal and the air.
Oh, okay.
Actually, they've been trying to get rid of the moisture.
Oh,
that's right. They were trying to get rid of the moisture. And they decided to go the other direction and submerge it.
Yeah, you have all the water you want. Oh, yeah.
And that oddly worked, or that was the first thing that had an increase in the signal. But it was slow and unresponsive, so then they keep moving along, narrowing in on it. And one day, what they did was trying to prepare the surface in a certain way, and what they accidentally did was wash off the sort of oxidized layer off of the crystal. It was the equivalent of rust on the crystal.
Oh, okay.
And then it turned out, if you had a couple of contacts, they used gold, close enough together, the darn thing works. And it was the point contact transistor, which had nothing to do with the field effect transistor.
So they wrote another paper.
They more did patents. More than that. They got to work. They built one.
Oh, ha.
And then somebody finally clues in Shockley that, hey, they're done. And Shockley apparently was not happy. He thought he was going to make the transistor.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's these couple of lab techs who accidentally, you know, this is a piece of crap anyway. We're not going to be able to manufacture this. It won't last long.
This wasn't even what I was talking about in the first. Where's my field effect?
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
Bell Labs decided they wanted to do the patent. Apparently, Shockley was like, okay, put my name on it. The patent department decided to give it to the other two because there were things in Shockley's notes about the earlier patent for the concept of the field effect transmitter.
Uh-huh.
Shockley was not happy. He felt like he'd been frozen out. So he locked himself in his room.
He froze himself out? You don't want to deal and with me?
Without
fine.
Working with anyone else, he came up with a completely different method for making a transistor.
Crap, okay.
What he did was layer different types of crystal.
Okay.
And he sandwiched one type between two of the other.
Okay.
And that turns out to work just like the vacuum tube. You got the one that emits, you got the one that collects, and the one that in the middle with the squiggly wireness.
Okay.
And it turned out to be easier and cheaper to produce.
Aha.
So he got that patent.
Yeah, yeah.
Which also had nothing to do with field effect transmitter.
Progress.
And that's the one that first started being produced for consumers.
They heard cheap. They're like, okay.
The Bell Labs announces the existence of this machine, mm-hmm. and nobody seemed to care, at least not in America. The Japanese quickly started making tiny radios. Yeah. All that bad blood apparently went away later, okay. when all three of them shared the Nobel Prize for creating the transistor.
They could pat each other on the back. It's a Nobel Prize.
There's no reason to fight anymore. We've just got the Chinese brass ring in the business.
I always liked you guys.
So that's how the transistor comes along in the first place. But from there, things happened. That eventually made it so that we could put millions of them on a chip.
Oof.
At a time. But we'll talk about
that. Yeah, yeah.
Next time.
Alrighty.
See you then.
Bye.